This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. 877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. We begin today with Pat Shingleton. And St. Patrick's Day in this community of Baton Rouge is synonymous with the man who graced the airwaves for many years. He was a staple like few others on local television, first at WAFB and then for a generation at WBRZ. And last time we visited with him, his long career as the weatherman of note on WBRZ was culminating. He capped his career with a flourish, and he is still involved intricately in many other aspects of our community. And one of those is his great passion, something that was his vision that has now become a tradition in our community like few, if any, others. Perkins Road on St. Patrick's Day, or at least the Saturday closest to St. Patrick's Day, which would be this Saturday, March 18th, the floats will roll, and thousands of revelers will have a good time. And it is Pat Shingleton who put it together many moons ago. And good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks so much for the nice words there. You always give me such a marvelous introduction. I feel as though sometimes the guys from Ravenhurst Funeral Home are coming in the door there.
Hopefully for you, not for me. But
but
I think you. I saw Pat last night, and he has weathered the years well. He looks remarkably similar to the day he went on the air many years ago, and here in Baton Rouge. But you left briefly and then came back, and are Mr. Baton Rouge, and this parade is such, and we've talked about it on this show that people who live on the parade route, actually, they advertise that when they sell their homes as a great asset.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. They line up there. I mean, the homes there from Hundred Oaks to South Eugene to Terrace to Perkins Road, it's just a marvelous, marvelous neighborhood. So many things are going on those days. They have reunions, and we've had we have experiences with weddings and proposals and everything that goes on related to families seems to be an event that kind of incorporates that.
And you've been doing this for nearly four decades. You have these rituals you go through. In fact, I saw your brother, Dennis, who came in from Florida.
Yeah.
Your whole family's involved.
Right.
What do these rituals entail?
Well, one for certain was in 1992 when Gary Mockler was the Grand Marshal of the St. Patrick's Day Parade wearing the green. And he said, I want everybody to come to the Slattery Room, which is a room that is actually incorporated within the distributorship out on Rieger Road, where the men get in there and we have some toasts and a bagpiper and some proclamations from the governor, lieutenant governor, mayor, all the former grand marshals or their relatives are in place or also attend. And that's one of the things that kind of highlights the beginning of it. And of course, this year too, the Clydesdales are making their appearance in the parade in recognition of the grand marshal, which happens to be Timothy Edward Mockler. Tim O. Mockler is going to lead the group this year. So there's those rituals. There are, mysteriously, the night before the parade, these green shamrocks show up all over the parade route.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Compliments of a shamrock painter, I guess you could call it that. We love to start the parade at the heart of the Diocese of Baton Rouge. So right there, the Catholic Life Center is instrumental in assisting us in providing their services and their facilities to stack our bands. By example, the United States Marine Corps band out of New Orleans comes in, and members of the band need a changing room, if you will. So they provide that. They walk across the street, start us off, lead the parade. And of course, the pipers, the Caledonian pipers of Baton Rouge are there as well to start it with the wearing of the green. They pipe that tune and they pipe Skyland and Brave, and it gets everybody also kind of ingrained into the beginnings of the parade. Of course, Bishop Duca comes out, as did Bishop Alfred Hughes and Bishop Robert Munch and Bishop Stanley Ott to bless the day for safety, recognize the patron saint of Ireland, and of course with Bishop Duca's heritage, St. Joseph as well. So we begin it that way. There's dignitaries there that make some announcements, such as Mayor President Sharon Weston Broom and D.A. Hiller Moore and Sheriff Sid Gotro and Garrett Graves stop by to say a few words as well. And opening ceremonies are the whole parade's televised on WBRZ starting at 9:30. And some of the other traditions as well, the kids, my kids, Michael and Katie and even Mabin, insist that I stay in front of, in the very back. I've never ridden or thrown a beat. I just kind of walk, Jim, and I stay in the back, but I have to keep moving because people come out and say hello, folks I know, and it kind of holds the parade up a little bit.
Yeah, everybody wants to. Everybody wants to see Pat, fun. And if ever there were a man named aptly, it's Pat Shingleton, who gave us the St. Patrick's Day Parade. But today it is amazing, and I think the whole community went into a funk when you were sidelined for a couple of years with COVID. But when it started, what was it, 86 was the first year?
1986 was the first, and at that time we had owned ZZ Gardens restaurant and pub, which is now the Merchant, and we had experiences with the St. Patrick's Day Parade when I worked in the hospitality business in Pittsburgh. And so I saw what happened there and decided to come down, and when we opened the pub, I told my brother Kevin, I said, I'm going to resurrect the parade and also the Irish Club of Baton Rouge. So that was a twofold thing. So I think it was 1981 when I returned that I was asked to do a live shot downtown, and I went down, and Rochelle McCann was then the administrative assistant to Pat Screen. And I said, gee, you got the parade lined up. You're getting it. She said, no, this is the parade. She said there was a convertible and a horse-drawn carriage, and that was it. And you know me, Jim, if somebody asked me to do something, I say, well, yes, no, or let me think about it. But Pat Screen said, you got to do something with this. And I think that's what kind of was the impetus to get that thing going. But, yep, it all started back in 86.
Yeah, so we've had Pat Screen and Tom Ed McHugh and mm-hmm. Bobby Simpson and Kip Holden and now Sharon Weston Broom and, of course, many governors, football coaches at LSU. Things come and go, or people come and go, but the parade keeps rolling.
It does, and I think that it's a testament to the family in which, I mean, Maven's the linchpin on this. She knows every float. She knows everybody that has the float. She is the managing director of the Parade Group, LLC, and she's just tremendous in being able to have everything fully organized and loves what she does. And Michael and Katie and Spence Maxey and Brittany Weiss. Brittany started a run now prior to the parade called the Shamrock Run. And that starts about 7 o'clock. So they're off the route by 8 o'clock, and then here comes a parade. So everybody in the family has a part.
It's a parade like few other communities have because of the popularity. And if you are ever out and about and, you have to drive in. A lot of times people park literally a mile or so away or 2 miles away to get to where they want to be, and yet they keep on coming, Pat.
Yeah, it's really, really great in which we have the relationship not only with the Hundred Oaks Civic Association and the community, and we work closely with state police, the sheriff's office, BRPD, to just ensure that we do the best we can to protect the route. Each one of the floats has marshals watching it. And Maven came up with a shamrock rating. And so if you get 5 shamrocks, you're golden. If you get 1, you're out of there. And there's a waiting list of about 30 floats trying to get in for the next year. So we have things in place like that. We video, we record all along the parade route, what is going on. Of course, it being televised as well. We use the Louisiana State Police to secure the overpass. We put out as many barricades as we can find within the city to protect the route. You know, we just do whatever we can to have a safe day that is fun and in recognition of the patron saint of Ireland, but more so for all those participating in it to be safe and enjoy the day.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. I'm reading a few emails, and we'll spend a bit more time with Pat Shingleton, and then we'll go to Mark Ballard, who has his finger on the pulse of everything politically, both in Baton Rouge and in the Beltway, and for that matter, beyond. More after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services, and Robin Dow is producing, and we're visiting with the incomparable Pat Shingleton for a few more moments, and he is he's getting his game face on. He's going to be, you have to walk a good distance, and a listener asks if there's some imbibing involved, or do you wait until another time for that?
I only do that when I see Jim Inkster at times over at Mansour's. But there's a few pints lifted there, I guess, along the route there from people not only enjoying the parade, but except for the drivers of the floats.
Yeah,
everybody might have a wee bit, you know. But
every now and then,
it's part of the tradition. I mean, it's so unique that St. Patrick's Day fall on a Friday that Bishop Duca dispensed of half the fast and fasting from meat on that day. So looks like there could be some corned beef along the route as well. Maybe some cabbage.
Well, it's a case in which the whole community converges on Perkins Road. Have you ever put a number to the people who are there? I when I said in the thousands, I was not exaggerating. I would imagine it's multiple thousands.
Years ago, we wanted to determine what the, along with the police department, determine what the crowd number was. So they put a chopper up and they tried to do an evaluation on, they compared it to a home LSU game whereby you had 90 people inside the stadium and what, 40 or 50 out. So it's comparable to protection and safety in that regard to that particular type of event. So when you have that area by Hundred Oaks and Acadian and coming down South Eugene to Terrace to Perkins Road, they're spreading more down farther, whereby we have the parade ending at Acadian. We're encouraging, we have the floats actually extending all the way down to College. So it's a pretty large number. I mean, it's comparative probably, Jim, to one of those events at LSU.
And it goes on literally all day. Even after the floats quit rolling, there is still ample revelry. And I would say, considering the amount of people there and the amount of consumption of adult beverages, that there is a minimum of fistic activity. People generally are having a good time.
Oh, sure. We had issues many, many years ago with an element was coming in and then creating some disturbance. But gosh, we worked closely with mayor's office, with the police department, with Chief Murphy Paul, with Sid Gotro, with as I mentioned, LSP as well, to just make sure that it is safe. And then now it's, I think you summed it up there. It's folks that are enjoying the day. It are folks that are participating or enjoying the day. And just having a salute of St. Patrick's Day and those related events. So, yeah, it's years ago when we started this, Jim, I was standing there at the bar with my brother Kevin at ZZ Gardens. And I said, he said, how are you going to do it? Well, we had a big breakfast there. We went up to City Park Golf Course and we walked back down to ZZ Gardens. So it tied into what you just mentioned, but back then there was not a available street closure, street permit, parade permit. So I contacted my friends in Pittsburgh and asked them to send theirs. So then with Pat Screen and later on, we developed that. And now it's, you know, the city's protected. The people that hold the event are obligated to have ample insurance, hold harmless, and everything needed to do the event. So once that started, I can remember Gretchen Screen and I were up there stapling these signs on the telephone poles just to encourage participation. Because as we were coming down Perkins Road, the traffic was still going up Perkins Road on the other lane. So all of that has just greatly changed, and for the good, obviously. But there has been some modifications, obviously.
Mike in Villa Del Rey, reflecting on your long career as Pat Shingleton weather aficionado, like few others, he says he's seen television evolve from a time when the weathermen were named Tex to the point where now every one of them is Dr. Pat Shingleton or Dr. Jim.
I really don't know how to comment on that other than it became a lot more authoritative in that. I guess for me, here's what the weather is like today and why. Here's what it's going to be like tomorrow and why. And oh yeah, here's the forecast. You can probably do that, Jim, maybe within less than a minute, a little explanation. I just thought it was a great venue to have fun, create a little humor, to engage that viewer, to be a friend of yours, and to be out in the community promoting it, you know, with live shots, with events, things like this parade and everything we do for the betterment. But it's a whole different approach now. I think that a lot of folks, if they want instantaneous news, weather, and sports, they're going to their phone, you know, opposed to waiting for a newscast. But it all changes. And I think as these things change, just with this parade as well, we have done some monumental changes too. As a matter of fact, my son Michael, he is now they have a QR code on every float. So if somebody is misbehaving on a float, that person along the route will snap that pic of that QR code, and we know exactly what they did and how they did it, and the community helps us as well. And even with that noted, we worked closely. We had a meeting last Monday with folks at the DPW encouraging folks on the route to place their trash into these gigantic, I think they're called Hesh bags, so that DPW can easily get that debris out of there. So we're trying to help the community. I know Representative from Monroe is trying to get out of committee a bill, Jim, that each crew, everybody has an event's going to have to pay for cleanup. Well, we've been participating in that for many years. I used to have to bring the barricades in from New Orleans. I used to have to put 700 barricades on a flatbed and bring them in, lift them off, hook them up. And then we started buying barricades and donating back to the city. And I'd love to have the entire route barricaded, which is our goal in some capacity. But it's just things that you do to make it right, you know, to do the right thing, to assist the officials so there's not too much of a burden on them.
Now, a listener noting, I believe you arrived in Baton Rouge. He says, this is Tom on Bluebonnet, 1977, is that correct?
I'm sorry, say that again.
77, is that when you arrived, when you first went to work for AFB?
Yes.
Yeah. He notes.
Yeah, and it was April. Yeah.
April
of 77.
So we're coming 46 years, but he says it was an electric trio with you, Jay Young, and
Jay Townsend.
Jay Townsend, yeah, Jay the Balmy Swami.
Yeah.
You lasted, and they burned out. So, but those were heady times, weren't they?
Oh, it was an interesting dynamic because I took a whole different approach to the weather. And Sid Crocker, great friend, Sid and I worked together. He showed me the ropes, introduced me to folks at National Weather Service out at Metro Airport. But we had an interesting team in which it certainly got the attention of John Spain, who was the news director at WBRZ at the time, whereby we were really getting after it, and we were gaining in the ratings, and they switched. Normally, where you have news, weather, and sports, they put Andy Leopold in the second slot with news, sports, then weather. And John Spain said to me, I used to go on Monday mornings over to WBRZ to record some furniture spots with Tommy Bainum Bob Headley. Spain had called me in his office. He says, you're going to come to work for us or we're going to send you out of town. Back then, Frank Maggot was the consultant,
well,
not only for this station, but for the one in Pittsburgh. And then I went back to the NBC affiliate there and commuted every weekend.
Left and came back. Well, Pat, good luck Saturday. Always a pleasure. Keep going. Back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing, and Mark Ballard, as is our Thursday tradition, is with us reporting from Washington these days. 877-217-5757 is your number, and Mark is following the trajectory of the Louisiana gubernatorial campaign, and we're now 30 weeks from Saturday away from an election. Count those days, it's 212, and in politics, that can be an eternity as far as how things evolve, but as we know, it's getting close, and it's so close that it would seem it would be exceedingly difficult for anyone other than those who are in the race now to raise the funds and get the attention and the support needed to mount a significant campaign, although there could be twists and turns, and more than likely, there will be a few people getting out of the race. But right now, there are some major candidates. You got to consider anybody who holds office as major, and there is State Representative Richard Nelson and State Senator Sharon Hewitt on the Republican side and Treasurer John Schroeder. And then most recently, we have a guy who's not an elected official but is well-known in this state and worked for an elected official as his right-hand man, Stephen Wagaspak, who was chief of staff for Governor Bobby Jindal. Head of LABI for the last decade, he is in the race, along with Attorney General Jeff Landry and Secretary of Transportation Sean Wilson. He resigned that post, Dr. Wilson did, but he is the only Democrat in the race. And then there's former congressional candidate Hunter Lundy, who was with us not so long ago. So there's some people, and some of them have ample money to mount a campaign enough to get the word out that they're in. And one of those will be Mr. Wagaspak, who has the support of all the silk stocking Republicans who can't abide Jeff Landry. But Landry has support of many Republican heavy hitters like Joe Cannizzaro and many others who've been around a long time, Boise Bollinger. And he also has been out there for a few years running, and the latest poll shows him in front. And Mark Ballard, it would seem that right now Jeff Landry is the target for all the Republicans because they're almost conceding that Sean Wilson will get one spot in a runoff unless another Democrat enters the fray. And so Landry will have a target on his back, and he is one, as we know, who gives as much as he gets. He will not allow an attack without a response. It should be fascinating to see how this evolves.
Yeah, it was something like a Trump type of dynamic that's going on, where he plays hardball, and there are a lot of Republicans that don't like that kind of hardball, or think that that's too far, that goes too far. But basically, we need to find out if Sharon Hewitt and Richard Nelson and John Schroeder can take a punch, and Stephen Wagaspak can take a punch. I'm not sure that they'll be able to.
Well, and it won't be just one punch.
No.
But Stephen Wagaspak actually got a nudge from the governor yesterday on his Ask the Governor show. John Bel Edwards is no fan of Stephen Wagaspak. As we know, he's no fan of Jeff Landry, but he cares about as much, it seems, for Wagaspak as he does for Landry. And one of the reasons is that Wagaspak has successfully beaten down the governor's efforts to get Louisiana above the $7.25 rate for a minimum wage. And after all, the state of Arkansas, which has an extremely conservative governor, has an $11 minimum wage, $11, and the world has not stopped in Arkansas. But here's John Bel Edwards commenting on Stephen Wagesback being an impediment to an increased minimum wage on his program yesterday.
You know, I do think it's interesting what you just said about Stephen Wagesback, who I've known for a long time, and I think he's a good person. And contrary to what a lot of people think, I believe he and I have a decent personal relationship, but very profound policy disagreements, and that one being chief among them. Every year since I've been governor, I've tried to raise the minimum wage, and quite frankly and unfortunately, I haven't been successful. And the main opposition comes from the Louisiana Association of Business and Industry, up to now headed by Stephen Wagesback. And I guess they have concluded that $7 and a quarter an hour is enough. It's been that way since 2009 because we don't have our own minimum wage. We follow the federal minimum wage. Right. Congress hasn't touched it since then. And I just want people to think about that. $7 and a quarter an hour is our official minimum wage. Now, not many people work for that anymore, practically nobody, which is why now is a great time to raise it, because you're showing workers, working people, that you care about them. And you'd be able to raise it in a way that doesn't really cost businesses. And so we're going to try again this year. The overwhelming majority of people of Louisiana believe the minimum wage ought to be more than $7 and a quarter. And while he may be very proud of keeping it down, I don't think you're going to see that as a central part of his campaign.
That was Governor Edwards on Stephen Wagesback being the successful political manipulator as far as keeping the minimum wage at $7 and a quarter, which is $290 a week, about $15,000 a year. Mark Ballard, that doesn't go a long way, and that's for somebody working 40 hours a week. I would imagine even some of the Republicans running for governor may have a different view than does Mr. Wagesback on minimum wage.
Well, perhaps, but I certainly haven't seen it. As when I was covering the legislature, basically Wags and his organization would say no, and they would follow along, at least the Republicans would, and that's why it never got passed. But Wags was willing to work with Governor Edwards, which Jeff Landry has not been so willing to do.
But he also is against Edwards and his move on ITEP. He thinks that business should get the old system with 100% of the goodies going to them. And Edwards changed that where they only got 80%. Rest went to local governments. And Wagesback says that's terrible. What do you think of that?
Well, he represents Law B, so that is a position that the business and industry in the state, which benefit from the ITEP, is wanting and backing altogether. I mean, what Governor Edwards was saying is that we need to take a look at it. It needs to be that the local governments need to have more of a say-so. And Law B has always argued that it was fine the way it was, where they didn't have to go to that extra step of asking local government if they were willing to give up tax revenues.
Well, it's going to be hard to get to the right of Stephen Wagesback on fiscal issues, and it'll be fascinating to see what Jeff Landry does, because I'm sure some political operatives would tell him he's got some maneuverability here that could actually be helpful to him. But he, too, as we know, is an arch conservative on social issues. We're going to find out if he's the same way on fiscal issues. And I stated on a show the other day that if they just leave Sean Wilson alone and don't go after him and attack each other, you can only imagine if Wagesback and Landry are just pounding away at each other every day. One of them will be in the runoff against Wilson as a wounded warrior, and who knows, lightning might strike a third time. It will be tough for Wilson to win a runoff, but the scenario is not an impossible one for him, or he wouldn't be in the race, Mark.
Not an impossible one. I mean, he'll probably pull in, or will need to pull in, about 40% of the vote to get into the runoff, and that's about all that is out there for a Democrat. Mm-hmm. So most of the handicappers are saying that it's you know, likely to flip and become a Republican seat this time around.
Well, it would be fascinating, too. A listener notes, this is Hallen Monroe, who's cogent on many matters, that if, let's say, hypothetically, Landry makes the cut, would Wagersback endorse him? Or other way around. They may end up hating each other so much that they can't abide that, like Scott Angel and David Vitter in 2019. Angel just didn't endorse anybody, and of course Darden went completely the other way and endorsed a Democrat. So we'll see. But it's going to be the Republicans will be taking it to each other, and we used to see this with Democrats in an open primary, but now it's the other way around. Mitchell and Sherwood. Mitchell, you're on with Mark.
Good morning. Wagersback with the minimum wage is not going to be governor. He's not for the poor people to help anybody. Landry is going to end up winning. But what he going to do about the minimum wage? If he up the minimum wage, he's going to make himself look good.
Well, yeah, I think it would be good politics for one of the Republicans, and it would even be good politics, I think, for Wagersback to say, look, I was just representing the business lobby, I was doing my job, but now that I've had a chance to think about it, I don't think it's going to rock the world if we increase it, because $290 a week, you know, the last thing we want to do is have people encouraged to be on the government dole, if you will, and if they're making $290 a week, and they're working their butts off 40 hours a week, and they don't have time to spend with their families, you can understand why staying at home and getting government benefits, even though it might not be at that level, would have some appeal to them. We want people to be encouraged to work, and one way to encourage them, as we know, Mark, is to increase their pay, their ability to earn a living.
Well, all of what you say is, and the caller said, is true, but I think you're daydreaming on this. I don't think that the business and industry hold such a sway over the legislature that they will ever agree to it. They'll argue that very few people actually make minimum wage. It's mostly teenagers and who are working at, you know, Arby's and fast food restaurants, and that they'll argue that by setting a minimum wage would keep them out of the workforce. So, but beyond that, the practical politics of it is that the legislature is beholden to business and industry and lobby as its representative. So I do not think we're going to see a minimum wage.
Well, and we had Bobby Jindal, who was against any new taxes. He finally agreed to an increase in the tobacco tax in the last days of his administration, but will his top aide, Stephen Wagersback, echo that philosophy, or will he not? We'll talk more with Mark, and we'd like to hear from you, 877-217-5757, back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Mark Ballard is with us, as he is almost every Thursday, and he's in Washington, D.C., but he's following the terrain of Louisiana politics closely, and we look forward to his appearance every week. And if you'd like to engage him in our last quarter hour, 877-217-5757, or talk at talklouisiana.org. And here's a question from a listener Boyles Parish? Okay. Saying that what's the relevance of Arkansas having $11 minimum wage? How does that relate to Louisiana having a $7.25? Well, it is a border state. Let's say hypothetically you're a worker in Lake Providence, and you can get the same job in Arkansas. You can drive a few miles to Eudora, Arkansas, and you can work same place, McDonald's maybe, whatever, and you make $4.40 a week rather than $2.90 a week. That's a $150 increase in your month and your weekly pay. $150, that's $7,800 a year. So it does make a difference in some cases. Mark and another listener has a good point, saying that, I don't argue with you, I think you may be right, but these other Republicans will be reluctant to challenge Wagersback on his minimum wage stand. But will the other Republicans also be reluctant to ask Stewart and Gonzalez, will they be reluctant to challenge Jeff Landry on social issues? Because in truth, I would suspect they agree with much of what he says.
Yeah, they probably do. And But I really think that what they're going to do is do as we're seeing what Trump is doing to DeSantis, and, you know, kind of pick out a narrow lane and then just go at each other with hammer and tong. So, I mean, I think that's what we're going to be seeing. And then we'll be seeing, you know, the Wagasback is going to be like the mainstream candidate, because he represents a business and industry. That's where his base is. And whereas Landry is going to be representing the, you know, throw them out part of it, mm-hmm. the conservative populist style of their position.
Well, Landry somehow, some way managed to infuriate a lot of the blue blood Republicans. Now, but he has the support of the state Republican Party, the Baton Rouge Republican Party. He's a player. But will there be a gumbo pack operation like there was with David Vitter against Jeff Landry? Do you see some third party operation starting up to try to take him down?
Well, they're going to have to do that, because he already has two PACs that are doing that for him. Landry already has two, I think two, it may be three, but has two PACs that are doing that for him right now, or are gearing up for that. So we also know that that many members of the lobby board have done this kind of scorched earth campaigns in the past, and so they're well aware of how to go about doing it, and have spent that kind of money in the past.
Scott in Central. Hello, Scott. Good to hear from you. You're on with Mark. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I just wanted to ask, I know earlier you had said that Jindal at the end of his term had endorsed a tobacco tax increase, but I'm pretty sure that was a renewal. I don't think that
He actually did go for an increase. Only after Scott Grover Norquist gave him his
renewal. Message. That renewal.
He did, okay, but well, at the end, he agreed to one tax increase.
Okay. It must not have been very much, though, that's for sure, because he was a hawk on raising taxes. But anyway, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Well, as a smoker, I can tell you that it was a lot.
It was a lot, but still, I suspect you, if you're still smoking, Mark, and I hope if you are, you'll cut it back a bit. We want you around for a while, but I bet you pay more in Washington, D.C. than you do in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, if you smoke.
Actually, that's not true.
Really?
They're cheaper up here.
Really?
So,
if you go to New York City, it's a different story, but interesting. Interesting. Well, Dan downtown. Dan, good morning, and we can blame Bobby Jindal for that. Shame on Bobby
Jindal. Good morning.
Hi, Dan.
Hi. Has Lobby or Wagasback offered any evidence that because of its minimum wage, Big Macs cost a lot more in Arkansas than in Louisiana?
That's a very good point.
Yeah, well, these people who are members of LABI, they don't pay their workers minimum wage. I just don't get it, but that organization has become wildly conservative. And Bill Huey writes, he says, I don't know how LABI got taken over by the Republican Party. I guess he's referring to a wing of the Republican Party. He says it wasn't that way when Ed Stimel ran it. And I think he's right about that Ed Stimel, who in his fading years actually went against some of the things he had proposed and enacted through the ability of his exceptional lobbying skills, he actually went like for a right to work. He even backed away from his stand on that at the end. But LABI today is conservative with a capital C, Mark Ballard. And Louisiana is a conservative state, but are we that conservative?
Well, they win, so I guess we are that conservative. I mean, but yes, the state has gotten more and more conservative as time has gone on, and Lobby has been able to exploit that move and create legislation and regulations that are good for business and industry in Louisiana, basically on the argument that they're creating jobs.
So, now, a listener, and I'll have to go back and check this, and this is one where I don't have a lot of knowledge, and maybe I should, but I don't, saying that Wagglesback lost a number of ballot initiatives during his 10 years, that he got on the ballot with the legislature, but the people did not go for it. And if a minimum wage were on the ballot, then I would imagine it would pass overwhelmingly. So it's probably not good politics, as Governor Edwards said, for Stephen Wagglesback to be touting his great ability at keeping the minimum wage at $7.25 an hour. James and right. Metairie. James, good morning. You're on with Mark Ballard.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Mark. What we're seeing now, and I was on with Jim the other day, Republicans in MAGA world are really good at scapegoating. In other words, blaming someone else or others for their own failures, their own problems. Ron DeSantis is now blaming the failure of the Silicon Valley Bank.
Okay,
on
well, what's your question?
My question is, this is, well, just a comment, that's all. And, you know,
well,
that's all.
Okay, well, I did intend to ask Mark about this court case in Texas. A federal judge nominated by President Trump raised questions yesterday about a Christian group's effort to overturn federal regulations, the regulator's decades-old approval of a leading abortion drug in a case that could threaten the country's most common method for ending pregnancies. And the FDA approved this drug in 2000. It's been 23 years, and now it's potentially going to be done away with, Mark. And this is an example of how Donald Trump and the Republicans, they did a great job of taking control of the court system in this country.
Well, yes, that's true. And that judge, whose name I don't think I'll ever be able to pronounce, basically looked like he was open to the arguments that the FDA had not done enough research on it, on that particular drug. And so, yes, that could be that could become a big issue depending on how he rules and if that ends up going up the chain. And if it does, the Fifth Circuit's already said where they stand on that, and the Supreme Court has already said where it stands on that.
Judge Matthew Kaczmarek.
Kaczmarek?
Yeah, I believe that's correct. Patrick in Innisfail State. Patrick, good morning.
Hey, good morning. You know, back in 2011 to 2013, I worked for Albemarle in Magnolia, Arkansas, which was just across the border from Louisiana. And now that you mention it, you know, I remember we would go to Haneysville a lot of times to go eat because the restaurants had better service and better food, probably because they could afford to pay people to work there. And if anything, I bet people from Arkansas went to Louisiana because at least they could get a job there, especially the young people. Like,
all right. Well, at that time, the minimum wage in the two states was the same. I think that's Haneysville, too, not Haneysville, but. But Patrick, we're glad you came back. We wouldn't want to lose one of our best and brightest. David in Atlanta. Good morning, David. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, gentlemen. You know, it's really sad that politicians like Jeff Landry and Ron DeSantis, in order to cultivate the right-wing extreme religious vote, they have this hang-up about drag queen shows and human sexuality. I just read in Germany the women can go topless at public and municipal swimming pools. Germany has less violence, less drug uses, less teenage pregnancy than we have.
All right. Well, we're short on time, but David believes we should, I presume, do something similar to that in America, and in some cases we do. And once again, I don't think anybody will be running for governor on topless beaches as one of his or her planks, Mark Ballard.
I don't know. I might go for him on it.
Well, they have one in Austin, Texas, right down the street from where Greg Abbott resides. So he can go to Hippie right. Hollow and and enjoy himself if he wishes. And who knows? Who knows? He might even be there incognito.
The truth is that America tends to be, or at least particularly in the Deep South, tends to be more religious, and that these issues become more important.
Well, thank you, Mark. We'll be calling again next week. It is always an honor and pleasure. Thank you for listening. Back tomorrow. Stay safe. Stay tuned.